Now let's cover one of the best and also the most famous sections of Wealth of Nations. This is about restraint upon importation, and it continues Smith's case against mercantilism. The formal title of the chapter is Of Restraints Upon the Importation from Foreign Countries of Such Goods as Can Be Produced at Home. Smith starts with a general point in defense of free trade that tariffs are unlikely to increase the prosperity of a nation. He refers back to his earlier argument that wealth comes from the stock of productive capital. What a tariff can do is secure a domestic monopoly for one domestic firm, but the tariff itself does not augment that stock of productive capital. We now get to a very famous section where Smith sounds the most like Hayek, the later Austrian economist, and Smith argued that the price system leads capital to the most advantageous employments for society. And I stress the word society there. It's not just that the price system leads merchants to profits, but how much you can sell a good or service for in some manner reflects the exchangeable value of that good or service, and thus, in running after profit, merchants are led to serve consumer demand in a way which benefits other people. This is a classic and very famous Smithian argument. And here we come across what is perhaps the most famous passage in all of Wealth of Nations, and this concerns the merchant, and I quote, "He is in this, as in many other cases, led by an invisible hand to promote an end which was no part of his intention. By pursuing his own interest, he frequently promotes that of the society more effectually than when he really intends to promote it. I have never known much good done by those who affected to trade for the public good." This, of course, is Smith's famous mention of the invisible hand, a central concept in his thought. Smith also points out that because of the factor of trust, capital tends to stay at home because it's easier to employ your capital near home. So if for some reason capital is being sent abroad, or if there is a demand to buy commodities from abroad, this is suggesting that must really be more productive than domestic production. Smith reiterates that a nation can increase both its consumption and its productive activity by buying cheaper goods from foreign countries. This allows domestic capital to be reallocated to more productive uses. In these passages, Smith comes very, very close to stating the principle of comparative advantage, later outlined by Torrens and Ricardo. He doesn't quite get there, but he has a very good understanding of the benefits from trade. Smith also reiterates that tariffs benefit basically the domestic manufacturer, not the nation as a whole. And of course, for that reason, tariffs are popular with many domestic manufacturers, but we should not confuse that with prosperity. Some of Smith's most interesting discussions are just held in passing, and here's one I'll draw your attention to. Smith argues that manufacturers are more likely to collude than farmers, and in general in Smith you find a much greater suspicion of manufacturers than farmers. He claims that farmers are more dispersed across the land, and that also in general they're more open, more willing to communicate cooperatively, and that they have fewer secrets. This is just another one of Smith's interesting sociological portraits, even if it's a bit to the side of the main argument in this chapter. Smith now moves on to a key question. When, then, are tariffs good? And of course, Smith has a reputation for very much being a free trader, and that's essentially true, but Smith recognizes there are some very important exceptions to the principle of free trade. Let's look at what those are for him. The first and most important exception to free trade for Smith has to do with the national defense argument. That is, there are times when a nation should not have free trade because it requires some kind of domestic manufacture to meet its needs for national defense. In the case of Britain, Smith argued this had to do with the Navy. Great Britain needs a lot of ships and sailors ready to defend itself. Smith therefore defended the Navigation Acts, which restricted a lot of the carrying trade to British ships, on the grounds that it would help defend Great Britain. And Smith wrote quite clearly, quote, "Defense is of much more importance than opulence." Most of this book really is about prosperity, but there's an undercurrent in there, a side argument, about how important it is to build, in some regard, a strong nation state, and that comes out very much in this discussion of Smith. Overall, it's remarkable how much Smith's understanding of the exceptions when tariffs might make sense, how much that matches the contemporary understanding of economists. Smith also argues you might conceivably want a tariff on foreign goods if you need to offset some kind of domestic tax imposed on your domestic manufacturers, because otherwise, without the tariff, there could be a kind of distortion where your domestic producers are at a relative disadvantage. Smith also understood you might in some cases want to impose tariffs on other countries, not because tariffs are good, but simply to get the other countries to bring down their tariffs. This is an argument which later was called strategic trade policy, and Smith outlines explicitly how it is that Great Britain could threaten retaliation and thereby, one hopes, end up with a freer level of trade around much of the world. I very much enjoyed Smith's brief description of how strategic trade policy might be done, and he refers to, and I quote, "the skill of that insidious and crafty animal, vulgarly called a statesman or politician, whose counsels are directed by the momentary fluctuations of affairs." Smith also argued there could be cases where a country should move to free trade slowly to ease the adjustment of labor. For instance, if there has been protection for a long time and many workers are employed in that sector, if a tariff comes down too suddenly, you might have too much of a sudden burst of unemployment, and therefore there should be some kind of slower transition. Smith also has a very eloquent argument that free trade works best when labor is mobile and the mobility of labor is not restricted by government laws. This was very important to Smith, and he argued that to get free trade to work better, we should, quote, "break down the exclusive privileges of corporations and repeal the statute of apprenticeship, both which are real encroachments upon natural liberty, and add to these the repeal of the law of settlements." These are themes which Smith has already written about in Wealth of Nations, but here he's repeating them as part of his case of how to make free trade work better. Finally, to close this chapter, Smith notes simply that revenue is a separate consideration. There might be reasons, unrelated to all of these arguments, why some tariffs might be needed to raise revenue for a state, but we're going to get to those only much later. In sum, this chapter is simply a breathtaking piece of analysis and also writing.